Good morning. It's 8:38 Finger Lakes Morning News. It's time to get healthy with Finger Lakes Health. Laura Turbide's here. Chris Lavin didn't bring donuts today, so I'm off to a healthier start than usual for these segments. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. I know, I was trying to think of news and notes. I know it won't be too long until we start having ornaments to put on trees at the various facilities.
Yes, all three of our auxiliaries. Taylor Brown has, for a long time, the auxiliary has run the Festival of Stars, where you can honor a loved one or in memory of a loved one. Same with Geneva, which will be a tree in the main lobby from the Geneva General Hospital Auxiliary, and then also we have a Penian Auxiliary, Soldiers and Sailors Memorial Hospital Auxiliary. So all three offer this as the way to remember or honor a loved one, and honestly, most importantly, it raises money for the auxiliaries, who in turn help create support for the foundation and everything that the health system and our patients and residents need. So it's a great way, and we send a little acknowledgement out to your family member to say this is what someone did for you. So with that, we also are continuing to with our walk-in Wednesdays for preventive it's such a brand now, I can't even say walk-in without saying Wednesdays for our HR. But in addition, we are doing walk-ins for mammography, which we've been talking about quite a bit. And I just want to say thanks for people coming out. Employers keep encouraging this. Look on our website for more information. We're offering one day a month at Geneva Women's Health at Geneva General Hospital, and also
second Monday,
Soldiers
is that
and
right?
Sailors. Yes. Okay. And Soldiers and Sailors as well. So the next one coming up in Geneva will be November 11th, Monday, Veterans Day, if you're off. If you're close,
right.
If you have a chance, literally walk in, get your mammogram, no excuses. No
all right.
Holds bars, all the barriers gone.
And we'll be posting on our community calendar the ornaments and the stars and everything that you can do to support the auxiliaries. So we're going to talk about diabetes care and management and good healthy habits today.
I am so thrilled because it has been a little bit since we've been together with Rhonda Solomon. And Rhonda Solomon is our nurse practitioner who is specifically medically manages patients who are living with diabetes, and really also those patients who might be at risk for diabetes, patients who might be pre-diabetic. But this is a very specific specialty for us. We feel very grateful to have her because, as we know, more and more people are living with diabetes with some risk factors that we've kind of like created for ourselves as a society, but also some things that are more perhaps inherited, just sort of genetic risks in terms of some of the things we know about that. So with that, really an important part of our population to work very closely with and have people to be able to be on top of. And Rhonda had started really at LifeCare when we associated with that practice and had been there for many, many years, but now has really, I think, been drawn fully in, where 100% of her time is really spent working with patients living with diabetes and metabolic disorder. And so I want to hear a little bit more about it from Rhonda.
Well, welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It says here on the website that you are CDE MSN ADM BC FNP and BC. That must be some kind of record.
Yes.
Most acronyms by a practitioner. Congratulations.
Thank you. CDE means Certified in Diabetes Education, and basically you're required to have some type of license to be certified. So it can be an RD or an RN, an FNP, a doctor, pharmacists, and MSN is my master's in science nursing, and I'm board certified in family practice and board certified in advanced diabetes management.
First thing is the Diabetes Care Center moved earlier this year.
Yes, we moved into a great space in the middle of the hospital, and we're doing really well. We've expanded, and now we have two great diabetes educators, a nurse, a great office manager, and a dietitian.
Let's start, after we establish the new care center, with a basic definition, because I think this is a condition a lot of people misunderstand and don't quite know what it is. So What is diabetes, what is insulin, and what causes our body to not make enough of it?
So insulin is a hormone that's required for you to use carbohydrates or sugars. And basically the problem with diabetes is not having enough insulin making enough insulin but not being able to use it appropriately. And so type 1 diabetes is associated with the lack of insulin production. And so people with type 1 diabetes typically go on complete insulin replacement. And type 2 diabetes, most people make insulin, although as the disease progresses, they can stop making insulin. But in general, you make insulin, but not enough, and your body has trouble using the insulin you do make.
And then one of the troubles in managing diabetes is that that blood sugar level goes up and down all throughout the day, so your needs change constantly, and that's why diabetics have to constantly monitor that blood sugar level.
Absolutely. Glucose variability is one of the most difficult problems with managing diabetes because there's many variables that affect it. It can be affected by stress, it can be affected by nutrition, it can be affected by activity, medications. Multiple things affect glucose variability. And so the most important thing in managing someone's diabetes is getting to know them, getting to know their lifestyle and the things that they do that may change their glucose control.
One of the new developments, I have a friend who's diabetic, and I watched him monitor his blood sugar with a phone app. So how does that work? Is there some kind of port or something that reads? Or
yes, continuous glucose monitoring is definitely the future. The app on his phone is used to scan a device that's in his arm, and that goes into your subcutaneous tissue and really gives a great pattern to sugar control, so you can catch a low before you're low, like when you're trending down, and you can catch a high as you're going up.
So let's go back to the beginning now. What are the factors that predispose people to diabetes, and what are some things you can try to do to prevent it in the first place?
Well, lifestyle is the biggest factor. You know, when you look at how our food has changed over the past 30 years, it's definitely contributed greatly to diabetes, and activity level, of course. Genetics, I think, have played a big role, and of course, stress level. Everyone's stressed, overwhelmed, overworked, and, you know, not taking the time to prepare foods. And I think that's the key, you know, coming up with a comprehensive plan that can help people to manage in today's society.
And let's talk about, you have a whole staff of people in education and diagnosis and treatment and nutrition to help people with all this.
Yeah, I have a diabetes educator, Cheryl Andreas, and she basically teaches people the basics, information about diabetes, and typically a visit starts out with that. People may meet with me once and then, you know, see her, or sometimes when their diabetes is managed by their primary care doctor, they may just come in for education and not need me. We have Pat Conkren, who's a diabetes educator that helps run the pump management program, and she also does some education. She teaches our living with diabetes classes and our diabetic support groups. And then we have Tina Ganzon, who is the registered dietitian. She does a lot of carb counting and menu planning, and even does take some people to the grocery store and teach them how to buy food. And one of the greatest things that I think that she does is teaching people to buy food on a budget. That's one of the biggest things that we hear, that it's hard to eat right because you can't afford it.
Now, let's talk a little bit about diet. When I was younger, one of the things people always thought, diabetics, that meant you couldn't have sugar. I mean, that's not strictly true, right?
It is not true. In fact, people need carbohydrates every day. We just need good carbohydrates. And my philosophy is that you need to follow a balanced diet. Each nutrient is important. It's just that you can't exaggerate some. And when you're eating on the run all the time and not planning ahead, then the things that are available are bad carbohydrates. And so it's difficult. It's difficult for even educated people, you know, to keep up with what they need to do to eat healthy.
And I love the parts about when we talk about what Rhonda said about getting to know your patients. And if I think about Tina and Rhonda and, of course, Pat, these are folks who really do get to know their patients, get to know their lifestyle, get to know their preferences, get to understand sort of how they're living, what their schedules are like. And they're all people who I think are good listeners, and also people who really do meet patients exactly where they are, without judgment, without the ability sort of to have a prescribed, rigid, one-size-fits-all approach, but rather to work in a really personalized way And I think that's the success of the program, is that there's this sort of a compassionate team. You're not doing it alone, and you've got a team who's really going to work with you. It is, you know, we started this because it was Diabetes Month, so Diabetes Awareness Month, but most importantly, thinking about how do you really, in today's world, just the things you're talking about, you can hear that she understands how people live, the stresses people feel, the things that might be changeable, but also if they have a favorite food or they have a special holiday, you've heard Tina talk about too, we don't ask people to give that up because we know that's not sustainable.
Well, a lot of it just is eating smart, especially. I always talk about how there's kind of a European model of smaller, more frequent meals and like snacks compared to the way we do it in America, which is one big heavy meal at the end of the day, which probably is not the way to go, really.
I would agree with that. I think that, you know, trying to make eating throughout the day as simple as you can is really the key. And I also think that a goal of the center is really to reach people earlier, before diabetes advances to the point where you have the comorbidities that affect your life, you know, that you can't be active because you have, you know, diabetic neuropathy, or you don't have energy, or you're feeling, you know, the symptoms, that really slows people down. And so it's hard to work around. If we can catch people earlier in disease, maybe not even when they've been diagnosed with pre-diabetes, but just overweight people that are at risk for developing diabetes, I think that that would really help our communities tremendously.
So what exactly does pre-diabetes mean? And when you get that, can you get it stopped before it becomes diabetes?
Pre-diabetes is when you make insulin but not enough. You're able to still have a normal glucose level. Typically, we diagnose an A1C below 6.5. So 5.2 to 6.5 is considered the pre-diabetic range. You're still making insulin. You're still not reaching the criteria for type 2 diabetes. And basically, you can reverse it. You can, through lifestyle and sometimes medication management, you know, reduce it and bring your A1C down and prevent the onset of type 2 diabetes.
You talk about getting to know the patient. Can you help them get to know themselves? Can they recognize when, I mean, obviously you have to do testing to be sure, but can they begin to recognize when their sugar might be getting off a little bit and maybe it's time for a snack?
To some degree, I think that you can feel symptoms, but it's very misleading because the symptoms of diabetes can really be attributed to just about anything in life.
Oh, okay.
You know, if I said, well, I feel more thirsty, well, it's hot outside and I didn't get to, you know, drink water all day, or I feel more tired, maybe you didn't sleep the night before, losing weight, oh, I'm doing a great job at cutting down my food. Like, those are symptoms of type 2 diabetes, but they can easily be attributed to something else. And so statistically, diabetes goes 6 years without being detected unless people are coming into their primary care doctor and being screened for diabetes.
We also know people are earlier and earlier with type 2 onset, whereas
right.
when we all grew up and would hear and think about diabetes, we very often thought more about type 1, I think. And it wasn't until we started to see really an explosion of type 2, and in particular, earlier and earlier young people.
Absolutely. And I'm actually seeing kids with type 2 diabetes, unfortunately, as young as 4 years old.
Is that primarily poor diet, do you think?
I think it's all the combinations. You know, I think it's definitely activity. I think it's poor diet. I think that it's stress. All of the things that adults are living, our kids are living with too.
Does research hold any hope of reversing diabetes at any point and getting the body back to producing its own insulin?
I think that there's a great understanding, a better understanding of what we need to know, but I think that because it's so complicated, we're certainly far from a cure.
All right, Rhonda, thank you very much. We appreciate the time and the education. FLHealth.org, you can search for the diabetes link and see about all the different management and education and nutrition information that's available. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Laura, thank you as always.
Thank you, Ted.
All right, we'll get healthy again with Finger Lakes Health in a couple of weeks as we come up to 8:53 now on the Finger Lakes Morning News.